right, welcome back to the 5-on-5 podcast presented to you by directmusicservice.com. Promo code 5-on-5, F-I-V-E-O-N-F-I-V-E. We'll save you some bucks off your first month subscription on DMS. And if you want to find us online, Trav?
Yo, go ahead and hit the number 5, hit the O, hit the N, hit the number 5, and then type out podcast when you're on YouTube. Make sure you hit the like, hit the subscribe, and ding the bell every time we drop a video to see our beautiful faces. Let's rock.
How much weed did you smoke before this?
No, I smoked some.
Weed was smoked.
Yeah, weed was smoked.
Good.
Yeah,
we're gonna get right into it. Thank you for your service. We're gonna get right into it. I am one of your hosts, Phenom, down the street from me, Jupiter Williams, down the street from him, way up north in Alaska, DJ Gray. Neek is sitting out today. He's a busy guy after the Leon Bridges thing, opening up for Leon Bridges. He's running around like a madman.
Man's phone don't work no more.
Right. Neek sends his regards. And our very special guest today, years in the making, maybe like 1 year. I might be exaggerating.
No. Two.
All right, 2 years. We are very honored. We're very honored. Make some noise, ladies and gentlemen. Dawn Perignon.
Boop, 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 boom.
Hello.
There it is.
Hello. Thanks so much for having me.
An epic
intro. I don't know how long it's been. We've been talking about it for a while, so I'm glad we could kind of make it work out. Finally. Yeah. Just a full disclosure, my house is being power washed right now, so if it gets loud at any point, just, you know, give me a little nudge. I can go on mute or something. We're getting ready to paint, so homeowner stuff.
No, you are all stuff, good. You know? So you're in Reno, your home, you're in Reno, right?
I am, yes.
Tell us about the Reno scene. Let's start there. What's the Reno DJ scene?
You know, I don't participate in it much anymore. I'm not as in tune with the Reno scene as maybe I was pre-pandemic. So pre-pandemic, I was typically playing, you know, every Friday, Saturday night. In some of the spaces available out here. It's very much still a casino town, but also a college town. Lots of different venues in the casinos. Many have closed, though. Harrah's, the first Harrah's ever opened, has closed here in Reno, no longer exists.
Oh, yeah.
The Edge Nightclub that was located in Peppermill has closed, no longer exists. There's Lex Nightclub, which is like the big, you know, casino club out here. And then there's quite a few other like small venues downtown. But for the most part, I'm just kind of bouncing around in other cities and playing with friends and, just taking gigs kind of elsewhere. And then there's Twitch. I like the virtual atmosphere as well.
Yeah.
I like the virtual.
We have to talk. Yeah. We have to talk Twitch. Yeah, we have to talk Twitch. A frequent collaborator, Boom Bap Mondays. Dawn, you love Twitch.
I love Twitch.
You've built such a strong community there.
Well, and it's created a lot of really unique opportunities. You know, I live in Reno, Nevada. Reno is not the mecca of, you know, nightclubs or, you know, nightlife entertainment in general. And so, you know, the connections and friendships, relationships I've been able to build just from Twitch is incredible. You know, I would have not been able to extend my reach with other DJs and bookers and, you know, everyone else had I not been so active on Twitch during the pandemic. It changed the way I DJ in a lot of ways. There's more opportunities in other cities for me. I get to collaborate and partner with people that, I knew existed maybe or maybe not. And now I get to, you know, fly to London and go do Soul Train with DJ Volatile and friends. I was just in Miami and we did a 3-day live streaming event, all electronic music. With multiple stages. All these things that didn't exist pre-pandemic or maybe I didn't have access to pre-pandemic, it's been a game changer for me in, like I said, lots of different ways.
So when did you join exactly? Were you on in Twitch there before pandemic? Yeah.
No. And when it first started too, I was judgy about it. I'm like, what do you mean DJ on Twitch in front of nobody? Are you out of your minds, right? But, you know, you're very used to, you know, DJing in like club spaces or corporate spaces or weddings or, you know, whatever the case may be. And so DJ Lowkey, a friend of mine from Denver, I'm from Denver originally, invited me to DJ one of his events, Goodness, which I've DJed the IRL event many times. And the first time I was like, no, I'm not doing that. I was judging about it. The second time, I had just left my corporate life. I just left corporate life to go do my own thing. And I was like, you know what? I'm going to give it a try. So it took the one stream. And I was like, wow, this is cool. What do you mean I can play whatever the hell I want to play? What do you mean I get to interact with people globally? Like, what do you mean? Like, I can go to bed if I want to. I don't have to get ready if I don't want to. I can be over the top. I can play whatever style of music I want. And so it just kind of opened Pandora's box for me in terms of how I approach DJing today.
Yeah. And there's definitely that weird moment in the beginning when you're just getting your feet wet in Twitch and you finish your set and it's completely silent in your house and you're like, did that just happen? Like, you know, did I just DJ for so many people? Yeah. It's like you just go back to regular life, like make a sandwich and hang out and watch TV right after. And you're like, I don't need to go to the club. I don't need to set up and, you know, deal with requests. I'm just doing my thing.
I don't have to tear down. You know? I don't have to be on the road with whoever else is on the road at 2, 3, 4, 5 o'clock in the morning. I'm spoiled now. Oh, I'm so spoiled. Which is a blessing and a curse, right? Because sometimes when you do re-enter the IRL space, you know, it's a different skill set, right? You know, now I'm responsible for that energy in that room. And I'm responsible of, you know, helping generate income in that space or revenue in that space. And there's, you know, it's just a different skill set. You know, Twitch versus IRL versus, you know, I've DJed corporate events online too. Totally different vibe, right? Than what you might experience IRL. So it's just yet another way to approach DJing. There's so many different ways. And it's nice being able to have a variety of skill sets, I guess, you know, that are, you know, transfer between the two spaces, but also, you know, add something to maybe I didn't have before in IRL, like talking on the microphone. Terrified it, would not talk on the mic. Now you can't get me to shut up, which, you know, okay, now we got to find the balance. Right? Where's the balance?
Twitch, I was on Twitch during lockdown, and it was like, it is such a weird different space. Like, you get used to it. And, you know, I always joke that DJing is the job that keeps giving you more jobs. And I was like, when I was doing my Twitch, I was like, man, now I feel like a TV broadcaster. I'm like, all right, I've got different scenes. We need to switch when this happens and this happens, that camera. And you're like, this is a whole other way of DJing that's just completely alien.
Does it feel like it's much easier when you go back to IRL, when you hop into it and you're like, okay, I don't need to worry about video and this and that and changing those scenes? And like, it's probably almost a bit of a relief to just play the music.
Yes, but also I'm in such a controlled setting that my ears aren't tuned to those spaces anymore. And, you know, in my home, I have control of the sound with, you know, I have dogs barking in the background usually. But, you know, beyond that, it's, you know, I'm in my headphones or everything's very controlled in that space. It's nice and cool in here because I have my own fan. You know, again, I have all these luxuries that maybe you don't have in the IRL spaces. And so actually this year, I'm like, I need to take more IRL gigs just so I can keep my ears tuned. So when I do enter that space, you know, my ears know, you know, to listen to the monitor here. And, you know, I know I use my headphones differently than I do at home. So just, you know, just little details. But I like in the IRL spaces that I get the instant gratification of maybe people dancing or the woo when I play a certain song or them singing along, you know, we receive their energy very different on Twitch. And, you know, when it goes silent, is it because everybody's playing video games or are they out on 10 other tabs watching, you know, other streamers? We just don't know. So there's that other level of engagement that's required.
Right. How many nights a week are you on Twitch?
Oh, it depends. So if I'm preparing for an IRL, I tend to be on Twitch a lot more because I'm test driving songs, just getting used to mixing them, you know, in and out, because I don't pre-plan sets typically. You know, I'll gather some tunes together that I might play, but it's an opportunity for me to, you know, just practice, right? Paid practice is what I call it.
Yeah.
Just like DJing in an empty club, right? Paid practice. But, you know, if I'm traveling, then I might stream once or twice a week. If I'm at home three, four, five, six times a week, depending on what's going on. I'm part of so many raid trains, but then I have my other couple, just my own streams that I do as well.
Yeah.
It's so awesome. Yeah. It's good to hear people staying with it, keeping up with it, because it felt so fleeting once everything opened back up again, where people were like, I'm out of here. I'm going back to the IRL. Yeah. See you later. And it's like, you have that community of people that truly loved what you were doing. And you just like, I gotta go. And you're like, well, they can't see you, or are they gonna even keep up with you? Yeah. You know? Right. And so those people, it's kind of like finishing a TV series on a cliffhanger. You know,
you're exactly like,
You know, you're like, well, I wish them well. Hope everything was good. Hope they ended well, you know. They're still out there working somewhere. I don't know. They didn't tell me, you know. Now with that, there is the talk of that they're gonna start paying labels through Twitch. Do you have any opinions on that, Dawn?
Well, you know, so I talk to lots of streamers. I'm a huge advocate of, if you want to grow a community, you have to actively participate in it, right? And so I talk to tons of different streamers, and, you know, there's an array of opinions with regard to, you know, a royalty share, if you will, back into the industry, music industry. I don't see a problem with it, right? Royalties are paid and people should be paid, you know, for their work. And now, in terms of how they approach it, I think if, you know, they're a little too greedy up front, then it's going to turn all the DJs away. And, you know, they'll not want to participate if it's too much of a financial burden on DJs, especially if they're not making a lot of money in general, which, you know, how do I want to say this? I think it's important that, you know, the royalty piece exists in some sort of shape or form. You know, Mixcloud has figured out a structure for that, right? I have a lot of friends that create music, and, you know, they're struggling in their own way to figure out how to generate income. And, you know, they like to generate income off their music and not just off, like, selling merch or, you know, dance around on Twitch for bits or, you know, whatever the case may be. So, you know, I think it's important we find a happy medium with that. But also, you know, taxing the hell out of the DJs for playing music, which is also promotion for that music. You know, I hope we can find a balanced approach with that. Again, if they get too greedy right out the gate, it's just going to turn people off from it. That's a lot of time and money invested to this situation. I don't know how they would effectively manage it. Are they listening for spins? How many times I play Jackson 5? Or are they, you know, is there going to be, how do they determine the profit share? Because I know a lot of EDM folks that only play underground music, and it's likely not going to ding, you know, the copyright situation. So, you know, how are they going to structure that? I don't know. So I guess my opinion is, if they get too greedy, it's just going to pull people away and they'll go find other ways to share music. But I do know that, from talking to some folks that work at Twitch, is the income per viewer is a lot stronger, for the DJ streams than what you might find in some of the gaming streams, just chatting, and some of the other market segments. So there is a vested interest of, how can we grow this thing? Because the viewership is a lot more generous financially than what they are in other segments. And so there is an opportunity to try to figure out how to make everybody, you know, win, right? But again, I think it has to be a balanced approach. How are they decide? And then also, you know, I did software implementations for a long time when I, you know, careered on. And you know, there's a lot of fear from the DJ side in terms of, you know, they're going to take all my money. I've worked so hard for this. I've created this community, all these things. You know, these things take time to roll out. And there's going to be some learning curve along the way. And so it's not like tomorrow they're going to flip a switch and drain us of all of our, you know, income. It's more of, you know, it could take a couple years of planning, another year of implementation. You know, and then they got to set the thing up, get the business processes in place. How's the revenue piece, the financial aspects going to, you know, all work out. So we're looking, you know, from my guesstimate, right, just my from project management past is we're looking at a couple of years at least before we even start seeing real change with it. I would assume they've not even signed the contracts yet.
Dawn,
they're still trying to figure out, you know, their approach. So, you know. So I'm not scared. I think we just keep doing what we're doing.
There? Yep, I'm here.
Oh, you're there.
I'm
here. Okay, all right.
Yeah. Did you guys freeze up on me?
I think we lost Dawn.
Yeah, we did.
Could you? She's gone. Connection issue.
So we can just pick up.
Yeah, when she gets back. What's connection? Offline. Back. Back.
Oh, there we are. I'm like, I bored them. I bored them to death. They just, I was like, are you guys still with me? Sorry, no. I went into corporate Dawn for a second. So I was like, wait, hold on. That's where'd they go?
No, it's good. It's more clear now, actually.
Yeah. Oh,
and
is it?
Less of a lag. Yeah. Yeah.
Okay.
So we'll pick up right where you were talking about. If you had to guess what was going to happen. Yeah.
You think the timeline's going to be closer to like 2 or 3 years, something like that?
Yeah, I think we're a ways out. Contracts aren't in place, right? Yeah. It's going to take forever to draft up contracts, get everything sorted out, figure out all the details. Mm-hmm. And then they have to figure out the business process perspective of it, okay? You know, how are we tracking? Yeah. What's going on? Who's paying what, when? How do we, you know, how do we reconcile this each month or, you know, whatever the pay period ends up being? You know, we're a couple years out.
So you're, I mean,
sounds like Universal Music Group is going to be busy.
So here's what I actually try that brings up a point, and you're more active on Twitch, Dawn. So my fear, I guess, is that things will happen kind of like the way Universal Music did with their whole music on TikTok thing, where I believe like that whole thing struck me a little sketchy, mostly because it was like, we're taking it all off for copyright reasons because we want to pay the artists. But then they rolled out their own subscription service for creators. And they're like, it's not on there, but you can subscribe monthly to our thing, and then you can use the music. And I'm worried, like, that's kind of where I see things happening with Twitch, where maybe some of the labels will get greedy and be like, we'll build our own streaming platform where you can play our music. You just pay us, you know?
Didn't they do that first with SoundCloud?
Kind of, yeah. Yeah. So, you know, that's kind of like my fear of like, and it's always just back to like corporate greed, right? Like they just want to make the money themselves versus splitting it with everybody else. But, you know, I don't know how that, like, Twitch, I feel like, is just so many fingers and so many different things that I just don't know how they'll split that evenly, you know?
Yeah, I don't know how they approach it. And, you know, when you look at, you know, just how the different companies pay out royalties, they have different schedules on that. And so then there's a whole reconciliation and you don't get paid for what, you know, 3 to 6 months after, you know, all the plays or spins took place in the first place. So, you know, how do you reconcile that? All those structures will have to be set up. Does this create then the, like, you know, industry DJs that only play Universal, only play Sony, only play BMI? Yeah, like, what does that look like? I don't want to participate in that. No offense to anybody who does, but I'll just play underground music. I play everything, so I don't really care. There's good music everywhere. And so, you know, I'm not, you know, I keep hearing this conversation like, oh no, if we can't play Diddy anymore, or what will we ever do? Well, there's a bajillion other songs out there. Find other music to play. You know, to me, it's just, well, if you're that, you know, vested in sharing music with other people, and, you know, your typical means or method of sharing music with people is no longer available to you. Well, if you really want to play, you know, on these platforms or on TikTok or Instagram or wherever you want to play at, then, you know, either you play the game there or you find other means, right? You know, it's not easy, but it forces all of us to think outside the box, right? And, you know, that's how we all ended up on Twitch in the first place.
Exactly.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Right. You know, that's why a lot of mentioned other it through... options exist. Sorry, go ahead.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. No, I was going to say, I've mentioned it throughout the beginning of this podcast years ago that we're in such a golden age right now for all of this music to even be on Spotify or Apple Music, where these people don't start pulling their music out and being like, hey, we're all going over here, like Peacock and Hulu and Netflix. Like, we can all fraction this off. And if you want the whole Taylor Swift collection, you can pay for that every month, you know? And that's the other option, where we have 50 different streaming services and everyone's kind of fighting for their piece of the pie. And then it just fractures the scene even more and more and more.
Right. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And that part's a bummer. Like, and now shout out to Mixcloud for figuring out some sort of royalty structure up front, so people do have, you know, the means to, you know, safely, you know, live stream music. I've not streamed on there personally. I know quite a few folks who do, and they love it. But at one of the challenges, though, you know, to your point, Gray, is we're getting nickel and dimed left and right, right? You know, we have our music services that we get music from. If you play other styles of music, you know, not only do I pay for things like DMS or Beat Junkies or, you know, all these other, you know, different services for the different styles of music I play, but I'm also buying tracks off like, you know, things like BeatSource and Beatport. And there's all these different things available to DJs. Tidal, right? If I want to use Stems, now I've got to pay the premium for that if I use Serato. So, you know, cha-ching, 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 cha-ching. So at what point, you know, you could easily spend $300, $400, $500, $600 a month on all these different services just to be able to do your job. And if you're the weekend warrior DJ and you're only playing a couple gigs, you know, a week, you know, how much is too much in terms of expenditures? And, you know, what do you end up cutting? For me, you know, I play everything. So it gets really expensive for me to go find music and, you know, get high quality, you know, files to be able to play depending on the spaces I'm playing in. How much is too much for the DJ in terms of expense? I don't know that DJs will want to have to go pay the Universal subscription and the Sony subscription and the VMI subscription to be able to play that music. So, I don't know. But it's that thing, too. Yeah, we can sit here and pontificate the hell out of it. Or just wait and see what happens.
Right, right, right.
Yeah,
but Instagram's a lost cause, right? Streaming on Instagram is like, forget it.
Yeah.
Well, unless you're a select few, right? But those are folks that are, you know, very integrated into the industry. And, you know, Universal they figured out a way to make that work. Yeah.
Right, right.
But yeah, I'm going to keep streaming on Twitch. Yeah,
Universal or Atlantic.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I remember doing, because obviously Twitch in the lockdown was, you know, the place to like try to get it, but it was still unreachable for like a large portion of people. So I remember trying to do streams on Instagram, and we'd do like a raid train on Instagram where I'd say, okay, go follow this DJ and go watch his live stream. And I would tell every DJ, like, you got to play remixes, like, key change, like, you know, all this stuff to keep it off the algorithm. And I remember I had this one DJ that was, like, kicked off 3 times. He's like, I don't know what's happening. I'm like, you're playing Drake. In like, no change in key, no change in tempo. I'm like, it's going to get knocked out.
He is the algorithm.
Yeah. But it is that thing. Like, you're right. Even this podcast, like, Colin, you guys started this in lockdown. And it's like one of those things where, like, DJs will always find something to do with music, even if different things get shut down. It's like, we just want to talk about the music, share the music, do something.
We're just junkies.
Yeah. You know, I think that a lot of people found their true fans through Twitch, and a lot of people found their true sound during Twitch, which is the biggest takeaway. If it all went away tomorrow, I think a lot of people could hang their hat on the fact that they've built such a strong community. Mm-hmm. And that's a testament of if you stick with it. Yeah. Like anything else, committing to consistency was going to yield those results from the beginning. With anything in the DJ scene, like obviously, like if you're practicing at home, if you're downloading new music, all these tools that set you up for success. But I think that this was finally the chance when it's all said and done, people look back on it and say, this is where I could be myself. This is where is a true artistic viewing of who I am sonically.
Yeah.
Now you go back to work and that's kind of like, fuck, I got to bend the knee now. Yeah. I got to cater to the client. I got to cater to the crowd. Yeah. Requests, you know.
Well, it's funny because my I don't know if you know Vic Damone, but
oh yes,
DJ yep. Vic Damone.
Oh, I love Vic Damone. He's fantastic. Yep.
He's great. He's one of my favorite people in the world. But he was doing. I talked to him recently, and I was like, "You're still on Twitch, right?" And he's like, "Yeah." He's like, "I still have a problem collecting music," and he's like, "And there's nowhere else I can play it." He's like, "So Twitch is the perfect place for me to be like." Well, here's all these weird sounds. Let me just scratch these up here.
Yeah.
And I was like, oh, that's perfect. That's exactly, you know, kind of like for him. And he's grown like a decent following and gotten like a lot of gigs out of it, I know. So, I don't know. There was definitely a segment of people that found their sound and what they like doing on there.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And initially, too. Yeah.
Oh, sorry. I didn't mean to interrupt. Mm-hmm. I like that you use the word segment because I notice, you know, some DJs just couldn't quite ever feel comfortable enough to really just play outside of the box they're used to playing in, right? And play more for themselves. Mm-hmm. And even I needed permission. My friend DJ Ageless reached out to me early on. I met him through Twitch, and he was like, do you, period. Always play how you want to play because it's just going to make you a better DJ. And you know, I believe it has because now when I go to an IRL, I'm equipped with more musical knowledge than I was beforehand because beforehand I was the weekend warrior, right? I did corporate stuff all week. On the weekend, I played, you know, Taylor Swift or, you know, Ariana Grande or Montel Jordan, whatever the heck I had to play in that, you know, whatever space I was playing in. And that's what I felt limited to. Because that was what was accepted. Now I'm taking other chances maybe I wouldn't have before because I found all these other edits, you know, during all this free time now that I had over the pandemic. And I'm better equipped to show up in these spaces, take some chances. If it doesn't work, then I, you know, I can go back to Old Faithful, right? And play the thing I know that does.
Yeah.
But it makes me more dynamic as a DJ to have figured out, like you were saying, your own sound. You know, I want every time I play, someone's like, oh, I know Don's playing versus, you know, the standard, you know, top 40, you know, pop type club. There's all those kind of signature tracks, and which is cool because now when people wander in from Twitch, they're excited to hear it IRL, which is like completely different thing than I've ever experienced before, you know, DJing under some stairwell in some, you know, dingy club somewhere. Now people can hear, Don plays that song. That's a Don song. You know what I mean? Which is cool.
Now, I do want to take a closer look at the leading up to that. What got you into music? What got you into DJing? I kind of want to hear the genesis, the origin story.
Oh, man. So I think similar to a lot of DJs, you know, when they first start, the story always starts out since I was a kid, right? You know, I always listen to music, but my mom ran a nightclub in Denver, Colorado. It was called the Broadway.
Oh, sick.
It's actually called Club Vinyl now, has been for, you know, past few decades. But I was like 5 years old running, you know, hanging out in this club and it was a heavy metal nightclub. And so it's like Hairspray bands, if you can imagine. My mom actually got married in that space, black wedding dress. I was throwing out dead flowers everywhere, you know, that whole vibe. So she married the sound guy. She married the freaking sound guy. And so, you know, for me, musically, you know, I grew up in spaces with live music. When I was real little, my mom bought me a record player, and she'd give me records that were left behind at the Broadway, and I'd get to play them at, you know, at home. And, you know, I spent a lot of time by myself. My mom was always working. I didn't have any siblings. And so music was kind of that thing that was for me and that I spent a lot of time with. So fast forward, and I get into college. I'm going to school in Kearney, Nebraska. I don't know if you know where that's at. Little bit different than downtown Denver. Cows on campus. I was like, what is happening?
Yeah.
This is weird. But I went to a house party one night, and I had seen DJs play before. I've been in nightclubs since I was like 14 years old. But there was this one DJ in particular. I don't know what the heck he was playing, but the entire house was just like losing their minds over whatever he was doing. And I was like, I want to do that. I want to do that. And like in that moment, I knew
now,
I needed to.
Now, how are they getting down in Nebraska like that, though? How are they getting down?
You know, it was, like I said, it was a little bit of a different vibe. At that point, because I grew up across the street from Mile High Stadium in Denver, Federal and Colfax. So that's where I grew up, right? So I show up and they're like, you're not from around here. Right. I did not fit in. I stuck out like a sore thumb entirely. And so, you know, in Nebraska was the first time I partied in a barn. They would throw parties, like frat parties and stuff in barns, and, you know, totally different vibe. But again, this one party in particular, I don't even remember the name of the DJ. I started learning a lot about hip hop during that time too, because I used to do sports medicine. And so I'd hang out with all the athletes from the football team, the baseball team, and, you know, just wherever, basketball team, and Napster was a thing. So we'd be on the laptop at night searching all these albums. And that's how I started listening to like Jay-Z and Nas and High Tech and, you know, all the like East Coast stuff that I was just didn't even like know existed yet. Cause I listened to a lot of like West Coast stuff and Wu-Tang growing up. Like that was pretty much an Outkast also, you know, stuff like that. But that changed me musically because, you know, one of the football players would be like, oh, did you hear this new album? And then I'd go look it up on Napster and download it. And I just started listening to and like acquiring new music that way. So then fast forward, when I moved to Denver, I was a bellhop and valet at a hotel. And so I collected all my ones. I had this big shoebox full of ones. And I went to, I don't know if it was like Guitar Center or what it was, but went and bought a pair of Techniques and a Newmark mixer. And started buying records. That's when I started DJing out. One of the guys that worked at the shop that I picked up my mixer from, he was getting ready to go on vacation in Europe for a couple months, and he needed someone to fill in for him. So I was like, yeah, I'll do it. No fucking clue what I was doing. It was terrible. it was a very humbling experience for me, but it helped me get my shit together very quickly, because it's like, I don't want to embarrass myself this bad again. This is awful. And so I very quickly got up to speed in terms of like how to mix two songs together, and started understanding, you know, the importance of managing energy in a space, right? That, you know, in my mind, DJing, you're responsible for managing energy in this space. How do I want people to feel? Do I want them to dance? Do I want them to enjoy their meal? Do I want them to break to the bar and go spend lots of money? Do I want to kick them out so they go home so I can go home? Like, what are they doing? And so that space, I spent a few years there. It was called Maddie's, no longer exists. But that's really where I started, you know, picking up on those, you know, kind of lessons in terms of DJing.
Now, have you kept all of your records from the beginning?
No, I got tired of moving them. And now I'm so pissed at myself because I had a cool, I had a pretty good collection. You know, I had all the doubles, you know, all the hip hop stuff from the, what were they? The record pools and whatnot. But then I had a lot of like really awesome white labels that I picked up from like dancerecords.com and, you know, a bunch of other like just online sites that I used to shop at. Once I understood that the certain DJs were getting the pick from all of the record shops in Denver, you know, those were all set aside for somebody else. We never even knew they existed. Right. You know, we didn't get to see those. So I just started shopping online, and then I had all the cool stuff, at least in, you know, in my opinion, I had all the cool stuff because, you know, I was finding just these really obscure white label remix joints from, you know, like I said, dancerecords.com, some spot in Europe, another place in Germany I used to shop at, Canada. And I just look forward to the shipment to my house and pray they didn't put it in the sun and that thing melted or warped.
Right, right. What artists were inspiring you from the electronic side of things at that time?
Oh, man. So on Napster, I would find a lot of DJ mixes. And I had already been listening to Bad Boy Bill quite a bit. I'd like randomly pick up one of his mixes, like banging the, or no, House Connection. I think it was House Connection. I picked it up in like Virgin Megastore or something. And then I started just going on these like hunts for all these different DJ mixes, and I'd get like, you know, Tiesto live from Creamfields, or, you know, you know, just a lot of different, a variety of different electronic artists, DJs, producers that, I download their mixes and just listen to them. And, initially I wanted to be a house DJ, but you know, that wasn't in the card for me right out the gate. I was playing hip hop. I was in the hip hop room, which was fantastic because I love hip hop too, but always wanted to play house. But Bad Boy Bill,
did you feel like you were conflicted?
Oh yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. I was always trying to like escalate the energy high enough to where I could play hip house. Right. And so, and the owner, the owner's wife of the space I DJed in, she didn't like hip hop. So he would always ask me to play other styles of music the first couple hours so her and her friends could come dance. And so that's what, you know, kind of pushed me into open format, if you will, because now I had the challenge of integrating other genres into what I was already playing. And then selfishly, I wanted to, you know, infuse it with some house music here and there, and which I think kind of got me started on figuring out how to, you know, blend all these genres together.
It's always interesting hearing during the Napster era, because I know we were all downloading just whatever, anything, you know, like if the file was downloadable, sure, why not, you know? And like, there's so many freestyles from that era that just didn't age well, or nobody even remembers them now.
I have so many I have so many corrupted files.
Oh, yeah.
So, yeah, yeah.
You know? So many corrupted files. So many files in my Serato with the lightning bolt on the side.
Yeah, just a question mark. Like, I don't know. You know, and go ahead, Grant.
So many wrong files, too. Just like, I know for the longest time, I was like, that song's by the Rolling Stones and the Beatles. And people were like, what are you talking about? I was like, that's what it says on the file, man. Yeah. Like, that is not right at all. I was like, oh, damn it.
Yeah. Like a big list of people.
Yeah.
How about the mega remixes?
Yeah.
The mega remix. Yeah. This obviously led us to blog era and being able to find music that way, and and somebody else kind of dictating, here's this, you know, the mixtape era. Yeah, you know, Dat Piff and stuff like that. I feel like it should come back in some sort of form or fashion, with everyone trying to get their music out there and try to go above the algorithm. I feel like we almost need a blog space again for people to tell us, hey, this is a free download, and if you like it, you know, you can start playing your DJ sets, whatever. Because obviously, like, if you're just getting started or whatever, like, SoundCloud has some stuff still.
Yeah, that's what I was about to say.
Right. Yeah, I don't know. I would like to hear from everyone. Like, how much music do you guys really think you download? What percentage is from SoundCloud?
Oh, man, I'm down to, like, almost nothing at this point.
Yeah.
I'm SoundCloud. I typically go to SoundCloud to see who put out what, and then I'll go to their what's it called, Bandcamp.
Yeah.
Oh, Bandcamp.
So that I know that it's a good quality.
Yeah.
So how about that? What percentage would you buy from Bandcamp?
I mean, 10%.
Yeah.
Right now. Yeah. 10% right now is Bandcamp, because it keeps everything fresh.
Yeah.
You know, you find a popular song, and then I go straight to Bandcamp to see if I can find a remix, because I know that
like a good DJ
some other five DJs are playing it out. Same.
Yeah. I was going to say, man, I think that there's going to be like a documentary or a book about how bad SoundCloud fumbled that bag because they were the spot for a second for music.
Yeah.
And then they didn't let people download. So people use download dates. And I think that threw a lot of people off. They're like, ah, man, I got to follow this person's grandmother to get this track. Never mind.
Yeah.
And then, and now you're like, now it's just gone to like almost a completely dead space.
I'll do that if I have time though.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
I'll go through the survey if I have time.
I'm seven steps in. I'm going to keep going, you know, you know. Like, I'm not going to not. I feel like
one DJ like 10 times on Instagram already.
Don't you appreciate it a little bit more, though, when you actually have to work for it?
Oh, for sure.
In general, right? Mm-hmm. Right? Like, music is
because so I'm definitely I'm definitely going to play it.
Yeah. 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 Like, if I had to work this hard for it, it took me 10 minutes to, like, secure the track and, like, get the thing and download it and make sure it works. Yeah. Like, I feel like I'm going to be a little bit more nurturing or careful with that thing. Just like with records, right? How many hours would we spend just shuffling for records, shuffling for records? Some of you still do it, right? And you finally find that tune and you take care of it and you actually take the time to wash the disc and make sure you're not scratching it and very like mindful about it. And so for me, because I like to dig for music, I don't mind so much having to put in the little bit of extra work for it. When I can have all the music all the time, easily accessible, I don't appreciate it as much. And then I don't know what I have in my crates. Because I make that mistake too. I go on this download spree, I get all the things, and I'm like, I don't even know what this stuff is.
Right.
you got to wait for somebody to request it.
Yeah,
let me see if I got it. Yeah, I got this.
Turned it into a game for me on Twitch. Like, hey, let's play all the songs I've never played before, right? Or only has less than 10 spins on Serato. Yeah, and I'm like, and I'm just as excited as they are. I'm like, what is this? Oh, I downloaded it 3 years ago. I've just been sitting here, this gem that I had no idea that I unearthed from somewhere. But such now a good it's feeling. Here and I can play it.
Yeah. Such a good feeling now.
Times they're not gems. Colin
was
he was looking in my Serato, and my Serato had this Chill Bill / Spice Girls Wannabe remix, the gray remix, like my remix. And I was like, I don't know what that is. And he's like, well, we're going to play it. And it was And it was just like a slam cut of the songs that didn't make any sense. I was like, I don't know when I made this. Like, I don't know why I still have it.
It's an unfinished Ableton idea that we're going to see how it goes over. I love it. You know, it's kind of what separates younger gen and people that have been DJing for a little bit is that need to want to dig deeper, to kind of want to find something. Nowadays, you can go out and throw a rock in any direction and you're going to hear Blow the Whistle. You're going to hear Get Low. You're going to hear, you know, Usher. Yeah. But there's so much. If you take one more step further, you know, maybe an Usher B-side that could definitely work on the dance floor that people kind of know, but it's not going to clear the floor. And you can kind of bookend it with something and trick your crowd into being like, this is just like that, you know? Yeah. But I feel like if you know you're only throwing WMDs, if you know every song is going to go off, then you're not going to deviate from that. You know, we've reached that point as a society where if you lose any bit of interest with the crowd on the dance floor, you feel like it's a total failure. Like, oh, I lost them. But back in the day, if you look at Studio 54 and stuff like that, not every song went off. There was flops. Madonna got booed the first time she performed at Paradise Garage. Like, there's these moments where it's just like you need to have some sort of back and forth, and a missed opportunity maybe gets people back to the bar buying drinks. So you're still in good graces with the club. Yeah. Technically, you're not bombing the entire night unless you play something where people just leave.
Yeah.
Which is like, you know, there's that. But I feel like now, and I would love to hear from you guys, like if you don't take the risk, you almost feel like you didn't show up that night.
Yeah. You gotta take the risk. And it keeps it fun, keeps you on your toes, keeps everybody else on their toes too. Because you can't just have a night that just coast all the way through, right?
No,
you got to have the ebbs and flows.
Yeah.
You got to have the ups and downs. You got to have the songs that are going to make people, you know, raise their eyebrow. Like, what the fuck is this DJ doing? And then you mix some kind of song into it and it's like, oh, okay. There,
yeah. It needs to come there. Back around. It needs to.
Yeah. You need to tell a story. Yeah. You know, just like WWE fashion, you know, let Cody Rhodes finish the story.
Yeah. Yeah. It's so funny because everyone just wants the Super Bowl moment for the whole night. Right. Yeah. You know, fireworks. Every song is fireworks. Every song is going to go off. If you made like a super cut of everything, you'd be like, major drop, dance floor, loved it. And again, and again. But that's not what this shit's really about.
No.
It's about breaking music still.
You can't sustain a night that way either.
No.
No, like I'd be tired. I'm in my 40s now. I can't play bangers for 5 hours. Are you kidding me? Like, like an hour in, I'm like, I can't live like this. This is too much.
Yeah,
you
can't do it.
Once you under, like, if you take the time to understand, like, just the psychology piece of it, right? And you become more intentional in terms of when and how you're playing things, and not everything has to be a quick mix. You know, this song deserves for you to play it in its entirety. This other song, only the hook, and only ever the hook, because nobody wants to hear the verses. Right. They're trash. You know,
because what's really 3 minutes, right?
Right.
Yeah. Like, once you get people's trust, if you can establish trust early on, then for the most part, you can do whatever the fuck you want within reason. Right. But again, that's all with being intentional. And I have that conversation with a lot of younger DJs who specifically grew up, you know, DJing on Twitch now, because that's absolutely a thing. Mm-hmm. Right. I've been DJing for 4 years. Cool. Where are you DJ? Twitch. Awesome. That's dope. Yeah. And that's a really cool skill set, but let's take this another step further and add other tools into your tool belt. How do you be intentional in these IRL spaces? How do you curate a night? How do you last for 6 hours in an IRL space when you have to make sure people are going to the bar? They can't just dance all night. The bar's not making money. Yeah. You're useless to the bar. You know, what does that look like? Understanding the human psychology, like, you know, when the energy's getting kind of weird in here. Maybe it's time to make them sing to me because people aren't fighting when they're singing. Right. I should wind this down a bit. It's time to go home. And they're at level 10. Let's release them back into the wild at a level 5. You know what I mean? Those are all very intentional choices that we are empowered to make as DJs, but a lot of folks who've only played peak hour sets or only did the opening slot or have only done, you know, a very small section of what DJing could be or is capable of being, they may not understand all those lessons. And so, you know, I encourage a lot of younger DJs, show up at the beginning when no one's there and see how the entire night flows and what that DJ is doing. What are they doing? What's getting people excited? Yeah. What things that are unfamiliar that people are still getting excited about? Take notes on that stuff, because those are all tools in your tool belt. But I can't play bangers for 5 or 6 hours a night. That's insane. I can't play Ski 400 times in one evening. Can you play? I'm like, I'm literally asking for the song while I'm playing it. Can you play Ski? If you shut up, you're skiing right now. Like, just
on the dance floor. We can't ski any harder right now. Yeah. We're skiing once we can ski.
I was gonna say, it's so funny because, like, when I was, this was in 2016-17, when I was DJing at this bar, I remember this other DJ that had just started but got like his first residency, and he's like, you know, kind of getting used to it, and he'd come to my nights. And just like see how the night ended. And he was like, I noticed like you, like the last 10 minutes, you're always just playing like R&B. And I'm like, yeah. And he's like, is there a reason? I was like, well, I mean, bar closed with like 4 other bars outside, it's going to get hectic. I was like, I like my bar to not have the problems. So you guys are all going to get in a good mood and get out there. Like, and he's like, oh, never thought of that. I was like, I mean, it's just, just the thought.
Or you get the same conversation, but it sounds like, Oh, you just trying to make some babies up in here, huh?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
I mean, sure, right? Yeah, yeah. It hurt to absolutely have them hook up doing before the end of the night.
That's yeah what I'm doing.
Yeah,
right.
That's what I'm doing. That than the alternative.
Exactly.
Right? Yeah.
It's just fist fights every night when you end the night. I don't know what's going on. People are brawling.
Yeah.
What we do around here, though, every week we do a matchup between two artists, and these are questions for you, Don. It's going to get weird. It's going to get difficult. You're going to have to pick a this or a that.
Okay.
And I picked the two artists for you today. We're going to go five rounds, one song from each of them for five rounds. Today's mashup is The Cars versus The Go-Go's. So we're going to lead off.
I see what you did there. I see what you did. That was very clever.
You see?
That's oh,
very, very clever of you.
Don, round one. The Cars drive or Go-Go's Our Lips Are Sealed. You can keep only one. Which one are you keeping?
Oh, shit. Let's keep The Cars.
Okay.
Oh, did we freeze?
Next one.
Oh, I thought you guys froze again. I'm like, damn good. It. Yeah. wait, did you expect me to choose the Go-Go's? I almost went with Girl Power, but I'm like, you know what? I like The Cars, so I'm gonna go with The Cars.
You got four more rounds. You can go Girl Power.
What if
Power.
I screw this up? I can go Girl Power. Okay.
There's no wrong answers. There's no wrong answers here.
I'm feeling pressure here.
Round two, The Cars, Just What I Needed, or Go-Go's, We Got the Beat.
Oh, We Got the Beat. I love that song. Yeah. I like the other one too, but okay, we're going to do We Got the Beat on that one.
Okay. Round three, Cars, You Might Think, or Go-Go's Vacation?
I don't know what You Might Think is. You'd have to play that for me.
You might think it's crazy.
Oh, keep going. Keep going.
It sounds like every car. It's like every car song. God damn it. Yeah. Universal's like, wait a minute.
It's a cover. They can get publishing off that. You're fine. It's fine.
Yeah.
Just in a cover. Oh, man. This
okay,
is hard.
Okay. So we'll go for Go-Go's on that.
Yeah. Let's do Go-Go's on that one. Yeah.
Okay. Round four, Let the Good Times Roll or Head Over Heels from the Go-Go's.
Oh, shit. Ooh.
This is tough. These are good.
Why are
you?
This
is good.
Let's let the good times roll. Because I feel like that's something I would have heard in like my mom's bar. And that's dope.
Hell yeah.
Hell yeah.
Like, I can round picture the five jukebox right now. I like that one.
Hey, sidebar. How many leather coats did you acquire from that bar?
I have my mom's leather jacket. So when my mom passed, there's, like, very few items I kept, and I kept her leather jacket. Yeah, because there is a wedding video somewhere that exists, maybe not, on VHS. And like, they hired a hairspray band to come in, like the pleather pants and all that shit, to play the wedding, you know, all the wedding music. And, you know, my mom's hair was all ratted out, again, black wedding dress. And I watched that video once and I was still too young. And, you know, there were a lot of not legal things happening in that video. That I won't describe here, but you know, and that someone at my age should not have witnessed. But so leather, lots of leather. I definitely have my mom's leather jacket still. Yeah, yeah.
That jacket seen some shit.
Yeah.
That jacket.
Oh, yo. Yeah, that jacket definitely seen some shit. That bar has seen some shit. So that bar used to be, from my understanding, there was a crematorium at the bottom under it. It used to be a hospital.
Oh, shit. Whoa.
It used to be a hospital. So I was actually, I ran into some folks in Denver recently and they brought up that space. And so if you go into the bottom level of Club Vinyl, there's grills on the wall. And if you put your hand in there, that's where they used to place the bodies to cremate them. And so that used to not be part of my mom's bar. They used that part for storage. And nobody ever wanted to go down there because people were so freaked out about it. And then she had the main
floor. Wow.
Of it. And I mean, that's my very baby metal. Sisters. Oh yeah, big time, right? Like the upstairs. So Club Vinyl has this real beautiful patio area. You can DJ out there, and it's a real beautiful spot. You can see the whole skyline of Denver. But that section used to be hospital rooms, and then were converted into small apartments. And so my babysitters would take care of me. I'd just stay in there. You could hear the bands playing downstairs. Yeah. And I'd just stay up there at night until the bar closed, and then we'd go home. But yeah, that space, it's an interesting space because it used to be a hospital, was eventually apartment building. And now it's been Club Vinyl for, I don't know, 25 years or more, for quite some time. But yeah, so go hang out.
Is it haunted?
Let me know if you... I don't know. Okay, so growing up... I know I totally derailed the whole thing. Right? Growing up... I need you to know. I need you to know I peed my pants there when I was like 5. I had to run the length of the bar, and I was running so fast trying to get to the bathroom, and it was all the way in the back. And I made it like halfway, and I just cried because I couldn't... My little legs couldn't... So I peed my pants.
The ghost is like, that's all right. Don't worry about it.
So one of the dude that used to clean the bar for my mom, he at one point he refused to go downstairs for supplies. And I don't know what the hell happened down there, but he would not go downstairs for supplies anymore because he was so freaked out by it. So I don't know if he just knew the stories and heard a sound and in his mind equated that as like there's a ghost, or if there was legitimately, yeah, you know, something spiritual going on down there. But yeah, I mean, it's a very interesting space.
That, I think anything at that point, you know, would freak you. Like hearing any kind of noise, you're like, that's it. I'm never going down there again.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah. Never again. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
The bar is so low for that. You're like, I think I heard a creak on the stairs, and I'm not going to acknowledge that.
Yeah,
anymore.
I'm never coming back again.
Two steps down and just right back up.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. Yeah. No. Mm-mm. Yeah. Now it's just all, a hand, you know, all
handing
of
him limes. Like,
you can count on me to go the fuck out of here.
Yeah. Yeah. You hire the spirits, you don't have to pay them.
Yeah, yeah, it's free labor.
Yeah. Yeah, free labor. Free labor, all the spirits.
Oh. Holy shit. Literally. Well, now I'm curious. Now I feel like we need to do a field trip to the crematorium basement.
Yeah.
That's about as metal as it fucking gets.
I'm interested because I know this stuff. I would suspect that the folks that have, you know, occupied Club Vinyl for years know all this stuff. I don't know, but, you know, that's what
it's
was
a hell of a surprise. Oh, by the way.
Oh, yeah. You know these things, you know, these rails on here on the walls? Yeah. I used to tell people those like stories when we'd be downstairs. We did a Halloween party there one night. I was DJing for some private event down there, and I'd take people's arms and put it in there. I'm like, you know what this used to be?
What?
Yeah. You know, totally not creepy. Dope. But
that's really dope.
That's dope. It's a cool space. Shout out Club Vinyl.
We do ask damn near every show. Dawn, have you had a ghost encounter?
Have I had a ghost encounter? You ask that every show?
Yeah. A lot.
Really? Okay, so
yes.
Club Maddie's.
That an alien in...
Oh, aliens. I don't know that I've encountered an alien. Yeah. However, Club Maddie's used to be a brothel. Used to be a brothel. And so one night we're putting all of our records away because as much fun as we had lugging them in and out of there every weekend, we just chose not to do that. So there was this little crawl space off to the side and we'd store the vinyl in there. And the other DJ was like in the crawl space and I was handing him crates. And at one point he's like, huh? Did you say something? He swears up and down there was a woman talking to him. I didn't say nothing. Nobody else was in the bar, but he was interacting with something in there. But yeah, it wasn't me. So have I encountered a ghost? Maybe. I don't know. But he did.
That counts.
He did.
That counts.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. There's actually a lot of old brothels in Denver. You know, Club Maddie's, which was next door to Lodo's. Also, a space called Ophelia's, Scratch Bassages DJed there a couple weeks ago. That used to be a brothel. They kept in alignment with the theme. If you look close at the wallpaper there, it's all very, you know, sexual, like nude women and stuff on the wallpaper. They kept a lot of the like sexual themes of that because it was a brothel. Also, Brown Palace Hotel, I don't know if you're familiar with that. It's a historical property. There's actually tunnels from the Brown Palace Hotel that go to other locations because, and there used to be a tunnel that went to, across the street to one of the brothels over there, but then also would go to some of the like political structures and whatnot that way, you know, if there were like leaders or, you know, famous folks that they wanted to get to a different location without having to go public about it, they used to just go underground.
Wow.
Yeah, Denver's got some cool history. I don't know shit about Reno, but Denver's got some cool history.
I thought you were just describing the airport over there.
Yeah. We need to talk about it. I'm glad you brought it up. Yeah. We need to talk about it.
I don't know a lot about the airport. I've heard lots of the conspiracy theories.
You just explained it. You just explained it with the brothels, what the airport is.
So
she's like, I don't know what you're talking about. I don't know. Yeah. Laser horse. I don't know what you're talking about.
The horse can hear me.
Yeah.
So, you know, allegedly, I don't know if this is true or not. Allegedly, that horse fell on the man that designed it and killed him.
Yep.
There's that.
Yeah.
And then, yeah, if you do look at the murals in the Denver airport, you know, there's definitely a creepy factor, you know, very essence of genocide, you know, on within those murals, which is pretty creepy. I do have a friend that used to do kind of an independent news, and he was kind of bopping around there one night trying to get an understanding of what the heck's going on. And he was told he was not allowed to do that anymore. So I don't know. I mean, you know, we hear all the conspiracies. Yes. I know, I guess we'll find out or not. I hope not. But yeah, definitely has
it's
a weird vibe.
Definitely the most like, yeah, it's very like, it's a strange feeling when you're in there too. Like, I think it's going past the horse on the way in that I'm just like, this thing doesn't want me here. You know, like
Denver's outside of Denver.
Yeah, yeah.
What's that?
The fucking horse. Yeah.
Oh yeah, yeah. And it's yeah. Once you tune into all the murals, that's the part where for me it just got weird. The horse was kind of, you know, definitely felt like it was an eyesore because of the bright red eyes. I don't know if they're still red.
Yeah.
They might have changed the color of it because I think a lot of folks had issues with that. I think there was a Facebook page dedicated to it as well because people were like just freaked out about it and needed to talk about the horse. But yeah, I'm not as privy to all the weird stuff going on at the airport as I am the weird stuff that was going on downtown. But but yeah, Denver's got an interesting backstory. So I used to DJ in a club called B-52s in Denver, had two floors. Oh. Upstairs was all electronic music. Downstairs was all college vibes, right? So I got to play like, you know, I play like Snoop Dogg and throw some rock in there too, you know, whatever. This is years ago. That was actually the Real World House when they did Real World Denver.
Oh,
so B-52s.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah.
I know exactly what you're talking about.
You know what I'm talking about. Yeah, yeah. When they felt Denver was still a cow town, which... I grew up there. It was never a cow town since my existence. But, you know, that's what we played one on TV.
Yeah.
That's Denver is actually a sleeper for pizza, too. They have Blue Pan Pizza, which is just like a fucking banger pizza place out there. And obviously, everybody's always like beer and weed, but there's Red Rocks, too, which is out that way. Like, there's so much cool shit out there. Like, I don't know. I feel like a lot of
sports.
Yeah,
you do.
All the major sports right there too, downtown.
Imagine being a sports fan living downtown and then relocating to Reno where there's no major sports. Okay, so I grew up, like I said, I grew up across the street from Mile High Stadium. I can't convert to being a Raiders fan now. Like, I grew up living, breathing the Denver Broncos. No. And just because the Raiders are now in, you know, Vegas, I can't convert to that. It's just against, I just can't. can't do it.
Yeah.
Yeah. There's no other sport.
You shouldn't.
I have a question about Reno. Is Reno is like kind of like the cool down or the come down spot after Burning Man, isn't it?
Yes. Yes. So I go to Burning Man. I've been. Can you tell?
You've been to Burning Man?
We got a lot to talk about. Yeah.
Jupiter go. Jupiter's like, I'm out. Where did Jupiter go?
Yeah.
It's like, nope, I'm not talking about Burning Man. So what do you want to know?
Yeah, Burning Man. I want to hear. So you've been to Burning Man a couple times?
Yes, I've been, I think, 8 times now. I started going to Burning Man before I moved to Reno. It's very convenient for me to go to Burning Man living in Reno because it's a couple hour drive. My first year, I still lived in Denver. We drove from Denver to Burning Man, which is, you know, I think it took us like 18 hours to get there, sat in line and then partied for a week and then, you know, drove home. But I go every year. It's a good time. I love the city when Burning Man is approaching because a lot of the art cars start rolling in and a lot of like interesting folks start wandering in, and it's fun leading up. And then even the week after, a lot of people are still hanging out and staying in the, you know, the different casinos and decompressing, if you will, from whatever experience you need to have.
I was just going to ask, I was like, awesome. So the crowd, the city changes with the people that come and leave Burning Man. Like, you see, like, oh, there's clearly a burner, right? Like,
absolutely. It's pretty dusty around here after Burning Man, like literally dusty, you know, from everyone's dirty RVs. And, you know, the hotels used to throw a lot of parties and stuff afterwards. Post-pandemic, I'm not really sure if that's still happening. I love Burning Man. It's one of those things, you know, this year I told myself if I stumble upon a ticket, I'll go. Last year I went in the mudpocalypse. Chris Rock, we were not going to eat you. I know everybody's like, Chris Rock said that we might, you know, start eating people. I'm like, Rock's too funny. We're not going to eat him first. Also, you know, he's not got a lot of skin on his bones, right? We're going to, you know, if we had to eat people at Burning Man, it's not Chris Rock. We're going to keep him around for entertainment value.
Moshe Kasher made a joke about that because he's a regular burner and he was talking about the mudpocalypse and he's like, you know, a lot of people, obviously it's fun to make fun of it. He's like, I'm a burner and I understand it. He's like, but everyone got it wrong because they were like, this is fun to see these rich people actually have to go through hardship and be poor. He's like, no. He's like, it's fun because all these strong, self-sufficient people are being taken down by rain. I don't know what to do anymore. It's fine. Yeah. You're going to walk through the mud with Diplo and Chris Rock. You'll be fine.
Yeah.
Yeah. The media is seeing the media, you know, give their perception of what was going on at Burning Man was very different from, you know, what we were experiencing at the event itself. What's funny is that last year I was like, I want a different year than other years. Cause after a while they start blending together, right? You don't know one year from the other really. Cause it's, you know, similar experience, but very different each year. And so I was like, I want a different year. All right. Well, I got a different year. With the rain, you know, it really, at least for the folks that I spent time with, you know, we got to know our neighbors. We spent a lot of time at camp. I ate a lot of really great meals this year. You know, I wasn't too busy frolicking around the desert, you know, at parties and whatnot. I stayed very close to home. I had a goal to read a book at Burning Man this year, which sounds really weird, but that's just something I wanted to do. And I got to do that. You know, it was a good opportunity to just get to know people in your camp and spend quality time with them, especially after, the pandemic. That was my first year back post pandemic. So it was awesome just to spend more quality time with folks. And, you know, there's a lot of stimulus there, right? Around Burning Man. Every camp has a thing that they do. And then plus there's all the art and the music and, you know, all these things happening. So it was cool to just kind of kick it and spend time with people.
Did you have any, was there a headliner or a DJ that you saw that just stuck in your head from last year?
No, I didn't really get to go to a lot of anything music. One, I didn't want to venture out that far. I don't know if you've ever walked out on the playa when it's wet, but the the dust will just cling to things almost like cement and just stick to your feet. Mm-hmm. And so people were walking around with trash bags on their feet so that it didn't stick as much, or just walking around barefoot. So I stayed close to camp. There was definitely, there was a dueling pianos at one of the camps, and I forget the name of the camp.
Oh, nice.
The dueling pianos are from San Francisco, and I might have a video of it. The dude did Cream. Wu-Tang, Cream. And he's sitting there. And dueling pianos. It was amazing. I got to find it on my phone. I'll send it over to you guys. But, you know, those little moments are epic. Honestly, I don't go to Burning Man for the music. I know they book a lot of big talent out there. But for me, it's more like community and seeing what each of the different camps have to offer. You know, I go to spaces like Groove Cruise or Shambhala for music, but Burning Man, I've never really gone there much for music. There's 80 bajillions. Oh, cool. Each camp like comes with like 10 DJs, right? That's like standard. Every Burning Man camp has 10 DJs and everybody does their thing. Yeah. And it's cool and it's fun. But, you know, if I'm out seeking music, typically I don't go there for that.
Right.
Burning Man.
I feel like that's like that's headquarters for a Ronnie Cycli DJ set over there. Like he's always doing like a sunrise set over there.
Oh man.
Yeah.
So we've heard some incredible sunrise sets at Burning Man. And have any of you gone?
Mm-mm.
No. Never. Would you go?
No.
No, yes. You're like, no,
I would.
No,
I want to go at least once.
You would go?
I want to go at least
you
once.
You should. Yeah, if you have an opportunity to go once. You know, everybody's like, oh, I don't want to be dirty for a week. I'm like, well, you know, there's ways around that.
It's camping.
You know, right. It's camping. And what's that?
Oh, it cut out. I was going to say, what's the wildest shit you've seen there where you're just like, this is like.
Where do I start? Oh geez. Well, I'm trying to think of something.
Like, let me think of
something. Anytime you start a story like that.
my good
friend and I would like to walk around during the day and just kind of, you know, check out all the day parties and what's going on. And we wander into this area and this man that looks like Screech. What is it? Saved by the Bell. Man that looks like Screech. He has like a ukulele. He's playing the ukulele. Sets it down. Rips off his robe. Now he's naked. And he starts running. And he's like, see you guys later. Right? He's running. Yes. And he runs into this crowd of people. There was a naked beer crawl going on. And there was like probably thousands of naked people just wandering around in this beer crawl. Yeah. But like, we didn't know what was happening. And so, you know, we happen to wander into this. And so we're like now in a sea of naked people, right? Just unexpectedly, which was, you know, I wouldn't say the craziest thing I've seen, but it was definitely like entertaining in that moment. Cause this man who was just simply hanging out playing the ukulele for us suddenly is like butt naked, looks like Screech, and just like runs into this crowd, you know, in this sea of people. You know, it's
he found his tribe.
He did, and I'm sure they had a fantastic time. There's a battle between rabbits and carrots each year, and so people dressed up as carrots and people dressed up as rabbits like meet up somewhere in the middle of the desert and like battle it out. You know, there's just all kinds of like unusual things. It sounds silly saying it, right? You're like, what the fuck is she talking about? Carrots and rabbits.
It's awesome. But, like,
in those moments, it's just fun and, you know, just silly. And it helps you just kind of get like lost in those moments and just appreciate everything. And I went to a Zima party. Went to a 90s party. We wander in. And it was when Zima was like back for a very brief moment, right? So we wander into this party.
That was quick. Yeah.
It was a very, very brief moment. And they were like, do you want a Zima? And we're like, yeah, absolutely. And they checked the cooler. Yeah. They're out. And we're like, what do you mean you're out of Zima? Like, we're here for Zima, right? We're out of Zima. And it, like, our whole camp was there. We had like 30, 40 people with us. So we're like, what do you mean you have no Zima, right? So then all of a sudden they're like, let us see if we can find some. We're like, all right. So they're looking for other drinks. And then all of a sudden they found the Zima and it was this big thing. And like everything they had, you know, pre-planned to pretend they were out of Zima. But, you know, they were equipped with pop rocks and 90s music and, you know, just all kinds of fun stuff. Oh, so God. It's, you know, being immersed in an environment where people are very intentional about the ways they might, you know, poke fun at you or have a good time. Or the ways they kind of trick and tease you is fantastic. So, definitely. I had a Zima. It was great.
Yes.
What flavor was it? I can't. It's like Fresca, right? Is it similar to that flavor?
It's like alcoholic Sprite, isn't it?
Yeah.
Now we're flooded with a
billion. I'm trying to go back in my brain.
But. Yeah, it's
at the time it was a big to do.
Yeah.
It was, right? Now we've got, you know, White Claw and, you know, all these other things going on. But Zima. I think I tried my first Zima maybe when I was like 14 years old. So, you know, a few short years ago.
Yeah.
Recently. Very recently.
2 years ago, right? A Bernie Man.
we should ask. We ask every show. Speaking of Zima and corporate food and beverage, since Neek's not here, I will ask it. You can pick a fast food restaurant. What is your go-to meal? What would the Dom Perignon meal be if you could build your own fast food meal?
Yeah, kind of like in the style of like Cardi B or Travis Scott. What would the Dom P?
It's got to have green chili okay. from Denver.
Okay.
For sure. And there has to be French fries and like some sort of cheese or queso on it. And it's just like a nice hearty like burger of sorts. But I wanted a smash burger and I want it like hormone free. You know, it's going to be an expensive one, right? Because I don't want all the like, you know, extra profit. All organic, pesticide free, all that shit. But it's got to have queso and it's got to have green chili. And the fries have to be crispy or tater tots. Ooh. Let's make them tater tots.
Okay.
Okay. That's what I want. Okay.
All right. What about what for a drink?
I prefer an iced tea.
Okay.
I just like unsweetened iced tea.
Wash it down with
lemon wedge. Zima. So is Zima gone again? Was that just a very brief speech?
No, I think it is. Yeah.
What the hell?
I know. It was just to do with my evening.
It was a fever dream.
It was
just a Playa fever dream.
It was, yeah. How high were you at Burning Man? Well, I thought I had a Zima. Yeah. What? Excuse me?
I thought Zima was back.
Chris Rock was talking
just
about
just like new radicals blaring in the background. Yeah.
I walked it through a porta potty into a nightclub. I don't know what happened.
We have a couple fan questions that we will give to you before we travel off into the sunset here. Three community questions. Number one, Dawn, what surprised you about pursuing your DJ dreams?
Oh, man. You know, so I left corporate life right before the pandemic. And, you know, I knew it was time to make a major change. And I'd always DJed on the side. And that was that thing I did on the weekends, right? And then I'd quit on and off here, you know, throughout the entirety of it. And I think most of us have been in that scenario at some point. But I think the thing that was most eye-opening this time around, one, I decided to DJ full-time during a global pandemic where there's no spaces you can DJ in, except for Twitch. Right? There's no clubs, there's no venues.
Yeah.
Like the entire world shut down. I'm like, you know what I'm going to do? I'm going to DJ full time. Like, are you kidding me? But I think the big aha for me was, you know, pivoting from helping other people achieve their goals and dreams, you know, through all these big projects that I would run for the company I worked for. And then pivoting that over and now investing that time and energy into myself. And I didn't, you know, realize the challenge in that because I was always used to sacrificing myself to help other people achieve their goals and dreams, right? We've got this big initiative. We've got to get it rolled out. And, you know, I'll take all those details and I'll go make that happen for other people. But when it came time to do it for myself, that assignment was a lot more challenging because I was used to sacrificing myself for other people's goals. And so I didn't know how to like really dedicate and like dive into something just for me. And so that took a lot of, I'd say unlearning of like past behaviors and redesigning how I want to operate, you know, as an adult and in my life and with my career and just as a human, to be able to effectively do that for myself. Because I was used to being somebody else's bitch, right? Now I'm my own bitch. Oh, shit.
Right. Right.
It's all on me. I don't have someone monitoring my goals. Nobody's making sure I'm keeping up with all the things I should keep up with. That is all on me. And so that was a big change for me. It's all fantastic, and I'll never go back to corporate life, knock on wood. Yeah, I had to entirely shift my perception on how I, you know, and learn new ways of managing my life, my career, all facets of me, which is a very incredible. It's been an incredible journey and very fulfilling in a lot of ways. And so if anybody's on the fence on, you know, if they want to make a pivot and do something for themselves, I highly encourage you to, and take the time to like have those honest moments with yourself so you can overcome whatever you need to do to get yourself out of your way. I didn't realize all the ways in which I was like in my way and all the ways in which I subscribe to other people's ideas of how I should play music, how I should show up, what I should look like, you know, all these things I've had to do in the corporate space and also in DJ spaces. And, you know, I've unsubscribed to all that shit and I'm just showing up as me and playing how, you know, I want to. And that's a very freeing and liberating, you know, space to be in. It's a more challenging road, but for me at least, it's been a lot more fulfilling.
Yeah.
Long answer.
And that's what we're here for. And you and I spoke before when you were in Vegas about the burnout and the demand on social media and the demand of trying to be front-facing and at all times, you know.
Yeah.
And just coming from corporate into that space of, if I don't post this, people don't know I'm here. If I don't do that, you know, it's so taxing. It's so taxing on the individual, on the artist. And a lot of the artistry gets lost in the sauce just because you're like catering, you know? Mm-hmm. So I do want to commend you for showing up unapologetically you, because I think there's a big lesson underlying there where more people need to do the same.
Absolutely. And being intentional, right? You know, it's easy to take a, you know, like a checklist and be like, okay, well, to be a DJ or to be this person or to do this thing, I need to do X, Y, and Z, right? I need to do all these things that I need to be consistent at. And there's absolutely some value to that. But, you know, for things of like social media, you know, I sat through a panel and, you know, I listened to what folks had to say about social media and DJing. And they're like, okay, well, 10 posts a day, you got to do this thing. You got to have all these interactions, all this stuff. And it's like, that's cool. But also, what if you were just very intentional as to why you're posting on social media and what you're trying to convey? And, you know, versus just following some script that someone gave you saying you're supposed to do this. Do you want all these meaningless interactions, or do you want to have the like one or two quality posts per month or per week or per day or whatever? You know, that's what beats the algorithm, right? Posting things that are so hilarious or compelling or creative or just flat out good, right? Or just being your authentic self when you show up and do these posts versus, you know, the robotic, ha ha ha, funny. Okay, there, check. There's one interaction for the day. Smiley face, check. Right. You know, I do some of that shit too, but I mean it. But, you know, I'm not just engaging, you know, I'm not just engaging to try to beat the algorithm. When I engage, it's because I want to. And you know, from my perspective, that's what long-term beats the algorithm. The DJs that I see that are thriving on, you know, a lot of the folks, not just DJs, people in general, creatives in general, that are thriving on social platforms because they show up, they do something hilarious, they're authentic, they play great music, they're doing something just different, they're being themselves, and that's helping them excel. Be so good they can't ignore you, right? but following some script in every facet of your life because someone told you that that's how you're supposed to do it, I think that robs you of a lot of like really cool, authentic connections, interactions, opportunities, because you're too busy trying to be something else because someone said you had to be successful. I don't want to do that shit. I did that shit all the way up until I was about 38 years old. And, you know, looking back, I didn't realize like how miserable I was trying to live up to everybody's standards of success and who I needed to be and how I should perform. And now that I do it myself and, you know, I'm honest with myself, engaging myself in terms of, you know, where I should focus my time and energy, I feel like I have a better chance at success, and success is now defined by me, not for what someone else, you know, decided is successful. You know, for me, DJing in other cities with people that I love to play music with is a measure of success for me. I get to go do that now. That's cool. It's not, you know, I don't give a shit how big or small this stage is. I just want to share music with people. I get to do that. That's a measurement of success for me. Do I get to play the music I like to play? Yes. Huge measurement of success for me. So anybody who's struggling with that, you know, my recommendation is always just be you. A lot of us don't even know who we are because we don't know how to be honest with ourselves. You step back or look in the mirror. If you can't have an honest conversation with yourself eye to eye, looking in the mirror without shying away or looking somewhere else, you know, you better figure out how to square up with yourself and be honest. And the more honest you get, the you know, I think the again, more fulfilling your life can be. But you got to get through all that bullshit first, right? All the conditioning.
We had asked this last week with our guest Jada Abello, but I think it's good to bring it back around for this. What does post DJ life look like for you? What ideally, what would your crystal ball look like?
I don't know that there is a post DJ life in the sense of, you know, I'm just very passionate about sharing music with people because music just resonates, you know, with everyone. And so whether it's, you know, in a space like Twitch or I'm curating custom playlists or, you know, maybe I'm not behind the decks, but I see myself always just exchanging good energy with people. I also, I'm very into, you know, mental health, spiritual development. I see myself focusing on those items as well, because I think there's always an opportunity to, you know, help people evolve, right? Sometimes we feel stuck and sometimes it's, you know, helpful to have a mentor or someone that can, you know, just provide a different perspective or, you know, help you understand, you know, maybe some opportunities in terms of, you know, those honest moments with yourself or, hey, maybe it's time to get a therapist or, you know, just talking out through some problems so they can resolve them, let them go and move on with their lives. So I see myself getting, you know, spending more time in that space. I actually spend a lot of time in that space when I'm not DJing currently, but, you know, more from a potentially professional level. Mental health's important. Take care of it.
It's often slept on in a lot of these conferences and DJ, you know, affiliated events and stuff like that, when it should be mentioned in the forefront that there's a reason that people fizzle out from this shit, from burnout and from being exhausted and from addiction and X, Y, and Z. Like, it's very prevalent in our community. We've talked about it so much. Like, it's real. It needs to be faced head on. You know, people need to realize that just because you get $300 a night and free drinks, you don't necessarily need to use them all. You don't need to feel obligated to get after it every single night and then bounce back 2 hours later and hop on a flight with your anxiety soaring through the roof and do it again that night. Like, there's all of these glaring red flags that happen on a nightly basis where we just blow past them, you know, because
we don't notice it. It's part of the routine. Yeah, it's part of the routine, right?
Right?
And, you know, and someone just spent $8 on a shot or whatever it is for me, you know, at one point I felt obligated to take it. And, you know, it's easy. Right. It's kind of a slippery slope. And, you know, you have the before shift, you have the after shift, and then you have the bajillion, you know, in between. And it's easy to get, you know, lost in the sauce, you know, from an alcohol perspective or whatever else might be available to you in those spaces. And so, you know, how do you manage that?
Right.
For a lot of us, we forget the gauge of what's enough or what's too much because we're caught up in the moment, right? And we're celebrating, you know, yet another birthday or, you know, whatever other thing there is. And, you know, I don't drink anymore. Not when I DJ, I'll have maybe a beverage here and there with friends, but I just don't do it anymore. And it's actually, you know, I'm a much better DJ, shockingly, right? When I'm not drinking every night.
Yeah.
I sleep better. Right. You know, and no disrespect to anyone who chooses to drink, but I know for me, you know, I like how I show up when I'm not drinking. And so I'm going to continue to do that.
Right.
And plus, I lost sight of the gauge of what's too much. Because again, you just get caught up in it. And it wasn't until I watched a video of me after a night of too much drinking on Twitch. And I replayed that video back and watched it. I was like, that's not my brand. I don't want people to see me like that and expect that that's how I'm going to show up in a space that I DJ IRL or virtually or anywhere. That's not who I am. And then I went through all the steps to deal with that because I don't want to show up that way anymore. And then I had to, like, you know, figure out how I reintegrate into society when drinking is very much of our culture, right? Because that's awkward too, like reentering these spaces that are, you know, you feel like you're not being a participant if you're not drinking with folks. So I'd show up with water or show up with another type of beverage. And I'd be very anxious. Like, what if someone wants to take a shot with me and I tell them no, you know, now I'm past all that shit. It's not as scary as I was making it in my head, but you know, those are all things most DJs have to deal with at some point in their career. And the more open we are about it, I think the more effective we can be at dealing with it and help some folks out and maybe save some lives.
It's so funny because, like, I've started, like, same thing. I'll have a drink here and there, but I kind of quit drinking, especially, like, on nights that I DJ. But what's funny is, like, when I get later into the night and people bring me a shot, as long as it's in a plastic cup, I'm like, I'll just take it. And once I just throw it away. And nobody ever knows. Like, I'm like, they're all drunk. Yep. They don't notice. They don't care. Yeah. I'm like, there you go.
Yeah.
I took the shot. Good for you. You know?
Yep.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
It's just a blip in their night. They don't think about it. Anything else. They don't think about you after that.
Right.
Isn't it funny?
Yeah.
Yeah. There's so much guilt associated with this $8 shot and taking it or not taking it. Mm-hmm. And after you get past that moment, you're like, who cares?
Yeah,
who fucking cares? Realistically, if it's one or a million, like, none of this shit matters. And you start to notice, and I know we can all attest to this, I'm almost 5 years sober. I mentioned it last week on the episode. You lose a lot of fucking friends once you step back from that bullshit.
Yeah.
Right.
Which is good, because these weren't your friends. These are fucking nightclub friends, and these aren't people that are going to help you change a tire when you're on the fucking side of the road. Like, they don't give a shit about you. They have your tequila shot. You guys say, oh my God, LOL, so good to see you. And then you go about your ways until next Friday.
Yeah, yeah. And
that's the extent of your friendship.
It is.
You don't even know this person's middle name.
No.
Well, you don't know their last name. None of this matters.
First name. See him
for any of it. There you are. Yeah. Yeah. You know, like, yeah. That's funny,
yeah. Some people will see, like, they'll see my social media and stuff, and they'll see people post with me and stuff. And then they'll be like, don't you know that person? Aren't you friends with them? And I was like, other than the interaction at the bar, I never see them outside of it. I never talk to them. I don't know their name. I don't know their number. Like, like that's on it. Friday, you'd think we're best friends. Other than that, I'm gone. Like,
saying they're an acquaintance would be a gross overstatement.
Yeah, exactly.
And it's like, you know, like it's just two ships in the night.
Yeah.
And a lot of times that person doesn't even give a shit about what you got going on.
Yeah.
They just like the song that you're playing.
Yeah.
You know, like, hey, good song. Here's a shot.
Yeah.
You know? And people get sucked into this though, and this menagerie of being like, I have all of these friends, I have such a community, I have this and that.
Yeah.
You put a $10 cover charge on exactly what you're doing, and then you'll see how good of friends you really are with these fucking people. I'm just gonna say it. That dance floor is gonna be fucking empty with all those people that you thought were your friends. Just gonna say it. Yeah. That's the hard fucking truth of the matter.
Yeah.
I do want to ask one more question before we send you on your way, Don. We have the 5-on-5 podcast playlist. You can add any song you want, one song, to our playlist.
Any genre?
Any genre.
Oh, hold on. I got my Serato open right here. I want you to add Miss Dynamite Boo, but I want the jungle version.
Ooh, okay.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Good pick.
I have it on White Label. That's my favorite White Label. I have it on White Label. Yeah,
hell yeah.
Hell I got it from. But the jungle version, it's on YouTube somewhere. I went and found it on there.
Okay.
But yeah, Miss Dynamite Boo, and it's jungle. And I feel like that's appropriate in this time because all of a sudden everybody loves drum and bass again, which I'm stoked about.
Okay.
I appreciate jungle drum and bass.
I was going to say, this is... Do you like drum and bass?
I do.
Okay. I've been like so on it. I've never been the biggest fan, but like I check in sometimes and like, I like, you know, obviously some of the bigger acts, but I just watched the Chase and Status Boiler Room like a couple weeks ago. And every time I go to the gym, I just put it on and I'm like, do I like jungle now?
Hell yeah.
But, but it's so good. And so if I had to pick, I would pick that Boiler Room as my set. There's a point in the set where he leans back from the deck and he puts his hand on his hip and someone's like, man, drop so hard he turned into a tea kettle. It's crazy.
That rips.
I do love drum and bass. I appreciate it. I didn't appreciate it as previously as I do now. You know, I'd enter spaces and they'd play drum and bass and I'd get down with it. Cause I'm in an IRL space. We're in that moment. I would never seek it out for myself. Today, right now I'm very, even more so open-minded musically than I was previously. And so, I definitely like to infuse my sets with drum and bass.
Yeah.
If I were to point somebody in the right direction for drum and bass, I'll tell them to go listen to Craze.
Yeah.
Craze. Yeah.
He's the perfect entry and he is just the perfect, like, entry, center point, end point to drum and bass. Like
we saw him at Disco Pussy, and the jaw was on the floor. Like, Craze is already an incredible human, incredible DJ, incredible turntablist. But quit being so fucking good at everything. You know, I'm just gonna go out and say it. Just like be incredible at like 3 to 5 things. It doesn't have to be hundreds and hundreds of fucking genres, you know, where it's just like, all right, we're good.
Sometimes you see Craze like talk before a set or something, and he's like, they didn't believe I could be. I was like, I think everyone believes you now.
We believe you, man.
Who is they?
We all
believe you can do it 100%.
Yeah. Yeah. Like, no. I believe. I'm a believer.
Yeah.
Point out they. Point out they for me.
Yeah.
Oh, my God. God. That's a whole nother podcast. I think that's another 2-hour podcast so we could get into that and be like, no, we believe. We're just gonna leave it at we believe. Don, let people know where they can find you on social media and any projects you got coming up that you want to promote.
Social media. So on Twitch, it's under Don Perignon. All one word.
Did you follow it right
on
then?
Instagram, it's Don Perignon. And those are the two social networks I use the most. I don't really spend a lot of time on the other ones. So you can find me there. In terms of projects, man, I'm just every day trying to be a little bit better. Did we freeze again? We did freeze again, didn't we?
Just wait for her to pop back in.
We were doing so good.
Disconnected.
So good. We're almost there too.
We're almost there. We're yeah. She's like, I'm yet. Bye.
Yeah.
Oh no. Oh.
No, but for real, chasing status boiler room.
Does it keep disconnecting?
Yeah. That's so banger.
Yeah. Banger.
Yeah.
Also,
that's so wild. You're back. I don't know why it
right
keeps
at the
doing
finish
that.
Line.
I know. I was like, what the heck? And it's weird because my internet signal doesn't show that it's dropped anything. I don't know what's going on. Anyway, so you can find me on Twitch, Dawn Perignon, all one word. On Instagram, Dawn _ Perignon. Those are the two kind of platforms I use. And in terms of big projects, man, my biggest project is me. Every day I just try to be 1% better and just being in the moment and seeing opportunities as they show up and taking the opportunities that align with, you know, with the life that I want to live. So I just try to be happy every day, keep putting good energy into the world. That's my big project.
Dawn.
It's a big one.
Dawn Perignon.
Appreciate you guys having
Thank
me.
You.
Thank you so much. Thank you so much.
Thank you so much for joining us. It was long overdue. And, you know, I want to say I appreciate your approach to mental wellness that you always continue to put out in the community. I think that that's vastly overlooked. And I think people need to head over to your Twitch and watch those sets too. Yes. Outside of the IRL stuff, really go embellish a DJ doing what they love.
Yeah.
You know, that's people forget that we're working. There's a lot of times that people forget that we're working, we're catering, we're giving to the community. It's time to watch a DJ and you give the energy to them. You know, you let them do their thing. And I think that's a perfect example of where you can do that.
Yeah.
Send her
all the bits and all the emotes.
Throw those bits, you know, yeah. Right? Yeah, yeah, yeah. With that being said, we'll be back next week with another episode. We have Double P's incredible DJ, incredible record collector. She'll be joining us next week and with a whole nother round of mashups and crazy stories like only she has. So
hey, we didn't even get some beef yet, did we?
No, not yet. We didn't even talk about the Drake and Kendrick and all of that.
Hey, which Drake is took it. Drake took it.
Ooh. All right, we'll go around real quick. Who do you guys got? I'm gonna say Kendrick.
I'm a huge Kendrick fan. I love Kendrick. I didn't understand
recycled. Kendrick used recycled diss verses.
I don't think Drake will out verse Kendrick, but I don't think Kendrick will out. Like, if Drake puts out a song, it will do no more numbers than Kendrick. Because Kendrick's whole thing is like, my percentage is bigger. And I'm like, yeah, true. But I was like, but Drake is the bigger pop star. And when you're measuring in terms
I'm
of
just saying
numbers,
content-wise,
I think,
I'm talking content-wise, man. Yeah. Like, Kendrick was spitting recycled verses, recycled diss verses.
Yeah.
To Drake. Like, this is stuff that we've already heard before.
Yeah.
Why are we repeating ourselves?
Unless Kendrick needs to find another child. Kendrick needs to find another kid.
Who released the AI thing, though? Where you could hear like Snoop on there. Where the hell did that thing come from? Because that was. I was like, what's happening? I thought we were being trolled. I didn't know who, where that came from. It was just it's strange.
This is modern rap warfare right now.
This is my trend. This is my trend forecast. Every diss track now a rapper is going to put out, if it gets a bad reception, they'll be like, that was AI.
It was AI. That wasn't. Yeah.
I didn't do it.
Yeah. I just want to hear somebody play out all of the diss tracks in the club and just clear the dance floor.
I did, but didn't clear the dance floor though.
No. Oh, people are listening. Like, all right.
We're listening. People liked it.
Yeah.
I mean, back to back still goes. I'm gonna say it. Back to back.
I ended it with back to back.
Yeah.
You have to.
Ended all of them with back to back.
You have to. All right. I think we'll wrap it up there. Dawn, please feel free to come back and join us on the pod. We had such a good time.
I appreciate it.
And then we'll see you guys next week.
All right. Bye.
Cool. Thank you. Bye. Have a wonderful week. Appreciate it.
Stay on.
Thank you.